It was my second time being in the West Bank. I was previously there in 2019 in Hebron. And I served with an organisation called EAPPI, which is a World Council of Churches programme. And it was an initiative which was started back in 2002. You don't need to be a member of any religion to be part of it. It's for us, people from Ireland and the UK, it's administered by the Quakers in the UK. So they do our recruitment and our training in the UK, and then we further train when we get to Jerusalem. So our role is to provide protection with our presence, and I'll be giving some examples of that at the talk tomorrow evening in Ennis. For example, we used to stay sometimes overnight with families in their homes because they were subjected to attacks by Israeli settlers, and I'll explain those terms later, during the night time. And we used to also accompany shepherds while they were grazing their flocks in the fields and accompany children to school. And we used to also monitor and report violations of international law. And those reports would go to the UN. We made those reports daily. And the other thing we try to do is, as much as possible, to support Palestinian and Israeli peace groups while we were there, and we worked alongside some of them. I'll be talking about that tonight as well, or tomorrow night rather. And then on our return, we would advocate for an end to Israeli occupation, which has gone on since 1967 now, and it's 57th year. And what I mean by that is speaking to politicians, doing presentations like the one I will do tomorrow evening in Tracy's West County Hotel. And you know, try and inform the public as much as possible about what's happening, speak with politicians, newspaper articles, interviews like this on the radio, etc.
And Moira, each time you have been to the West Bank, would you spend a considerable period of time there?
Yes, normally we would be there for 3 months. So this time, unfortunately, I was there from the end of August, but we had to be evacuated. I was there during September and the first part of October, but we had to be evacuated following the attack by Hamas in Israel on the 7th of October, and then the immediate and ongoing attack by Israel in Gaza. It was impossible for us to continue our monitoring work because immediately on the 7th of October, the Israeli military and Israeli settlers blocked off access to the villages where we used to monitor. I should say I was based in an area called Misafer Yatta, which is in the south of the occupied West Bank. And it's very rural, beautiful, hilly, beautiful, rural, isolated villages. And the families there depend entirely for their income on shepherding their sheep and goats on the land that they've done for generations. But immediately on the 7th of October, the Israeli military and settlers blocked off access to those villages where we used to monitor, and we were prevented from getting access.
And can I ask you, Mario, why did they do that? Was it that they were just so angry over what had happened on the 7th of October, or that they didn't want Palestinians to be helped, or that they didn't want you reporting on what you were seeing, or was it a mixture of all of the above?
I think it's a combination of the above. Certainly, it felt like revenge. So, like many of the villagers still remain trapped in the villages right to today, that's 6 months later, even though these villagers had absolutely no knowledge of or involvement in or support for Hamas. So the problem is as well is that, understandably, while most of the focus on what's happening in Gaza is getting reported on the media, there's little reporting on what's happening in the West Bank. And the Israeli settlers have taken advantage of this situation and the military to carry out a massive land grab of Palestinian land. It's been the most land has been grabbed in the last 6 months than at any time since the occupation began in 1967. So if I could maybe just explain a small bit about these settlements, because the presence of the settlements are really responsible for most of the human rights abuses that are happening in the West Bank. So what I refer to as Israeli settlers, these are Jewish Israeli citizens who move on from Israel and live on Palestinian land in housing groups. Sometimes it's just a few, sometimes they're as big as 80,000. These are known as settlements. And they're in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. And When I was in Hebron in particular, I was really surprised because many of the settlers had American accents. And of course, any Jewish person living anywhere in the world, even going back to their grandmother being Jewish, they can go to Israel, get Israeli citizenship, and if they choose, they can move on and take Palestinian land and build a home or whatever in the occupied West Bank. And this housing is, it's an Israeli government enterprise, so this housing is heavily subsidized by the Israeli government. And all of these Israeli settlements in the West Bank, they're illegal under international law. And to get a sense of the scale of it, the area we're talking about is very small. So the total area of the West Bank and East Jerusalem combined is smaller, about 10% smaller than County Galway. I live in Galway. And yet, into this very small area, there are more than 700,000 Israeli settlers living in illegal settlements on occupied Palestinian land.
So it's very condensed then, by the sounds of what you're describing.
Yes, even though the area where I was is rural, hilly area in the south, but there are Israeli settlements and new settlements, which they call outposts, which might be just a tent for a small number of people on a hill. They're popping up everywhere, all over the area of Misrata Yatif, where I was, and elsewhere in the West Bank. So while Palestinian families are being forced from their homes due to violence and ever-increasing violence from the Israeli settlers, often supported by the Israeli military, by the way, the number of Israeli settlers living in these illegal settlements continues to increase while the Palestinians are being forced off their land.
And Moira, can I ask you, has the number of Israeli settlements and settlers moving into those areas, has that been stepped up noticeably during the current term of this Netanyahu administration?
Yes, well, it's been going on. It's been going on since 1967. The first settlement started in the late 60s, early 70s, but it has been stepped up and more land is being taken over. For example, in the areas where I was, I'm in regular contact with many of the villagers. And while the situation was very bad when we were there, as I will show evidence, photographs and videos of what I witnessed myself at the presentation tomorrow night, at the same time, the number of settlements are increasing, and you might have a small group taking over a hill. They will take over the entire hill, the land belonging to the Palestinian farmers, and also the valleys all around it. So a small group of people, it might be a couple or it might be three young guys, so-called hilltop youth, and they might take over 100 acres. And many of them are heavily armed, and Palestinians are just completely helpless in the face of the unprecedented levels of violence that's happening there at the moment. Many of the settlers are going around in groups. They're armed with machine guns. Many of them were armed when we were there, but it has got much worse. And many of them now are going around in Israeli army uniforms. They're going into villages and they're terrorizing the residents. And this is combined with attacks also backed up by the Israeli military. And
so, I wanted to ask you that, Mario, when you said that the settlers are wearing Israeli military uniforms.
Yes.
I wondered, you know, what were they getting those without the knowledge of the military, the IDF, or was it with their support? From the sounds of what you've just said, it's with their knowledge.
With their knowledge and support, because many of these armed settlers have served as reservists in the Israeli army. Like, all young people go to the Israeli army for 2 years and 8 months when they're about 18, 19, 20 year olds. So at the moment in Gaza, the Israeli army have called up reservists. These are people who have served over the years in the army. So many of these of the armed settlers have served as reservists in the Israeli army. So they've spent 2 or 3 months in Gaza, carrying out the kind of atrocities that we see on our TVs every day. Then they return to the illegal settlements in the West Bank and continue their violence. And they go around, much of the time they're also wearing masks.
And Maura, can I ask you, I mean, you and other human rights monitors, have you witnessed particular incidents? And if you do, what is the perception of human rights monitors from the viewpoint of these settlers? Do they try and stop you reporting on what you're seeing or just leave you be?
Yeah, when we were there, we wear a jacket which clearly identifies who we are, so that we're identifiable to both the Israeli settlers and the Israeli army. But yes, like Palestinians, we suffered some harassment from mostly from settlers, but sometimes from the army as well. The harassment would take the form of name-calling, you know, calling us anti-Semites, Nazis. We used to help protect children who were being subjected to harassment as they tried to walk to school. And sometimes we were, the settlers used to call us paedophiles because we were trying to protect children. Sometimes we were harassed by the Israeli military. They would stop us, detain us temporarily. We were never detained for a long period of time. Photograph our passports and photograph us.
Were you ever fearful that it could step up in terms of seriousness?
Yeah, well, you know, some of the Israeli settlers, particularly the young guys, they're known as the Hilltop Youth, can be very unpredictable and violent. So, you know, obviously, when they were around, I was always very concerned and very careful. We documented everything. We used our cameras to try and video them if they were harassing us, and that was partly our protection. But most of the time, like, our role, as I said, was not, it wasn't to do with us. It was really to do with the shepherds who were trying to graze their sheep and goats. Their income depends entirely on it, to graze their sheep and goats on their land. And already much of the land had been stolen, taken over by settlers, so they had reduced land. They were forced to spend extra money buying hay and grain, which they had to buy from Israel, and it was very expensive. So that obviously reduced their income. They had to sell off much of their herds. So as one of the guys there, like, said to us, they're just simply tightening the noose around us, so they're making our lives impossible, so that we have no choice but to leave. And so the combination of attacking shepherds in the field, and I should say while we were there, the shepherds had limited access to the field, but since the 7th of October, they've had hardly any access. If they tried to take their flocks out at all onto their land, the Israeli settlers send drones, or they come themselves, and they're armed with machine guns, which have been given to them by Minister Ben-Gavir, who's the Minister of so-called security in the Israeli government. So they're heavily armed. They will force the sheep and goats off the land and sometimes attack the shepherds. They've attacked people's families during the night. Many people have been forced out of their homes. I personally know of two different families that we knew, but also others that we knew well, and also others that we knew and had met, have been forced off their land, some before the 7th of October and some since. So the situation was really bad before the 7th of October. It's been going on since the occupation began in 1967.
Maury, you say, you know, you and other human rights monitors report on what you see and hear back to the UN. Is anything ever done about what you report back, or do you get any feedback on what you're reporting back?
Well, the stuff that we report to the UN, it's verified by us on the ground, and then it's doubly verified by the UN, and then it appears in the UN reports, and they provide these regular reports by UN OCHA. So they give regular updates. So, for example, there was an update from in the last few days about what's happening in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and unfortunately, because there are hardly any monitors like ourselves on the ground now, a lot of incidents of violence is not being reported to the same extent as it was when we were there, because we were the biggest organization on the ground. There were usually between 23 or 4 up to even 30 of us monitors on the ground with our organization at any one time, and that's going back to 2002. So there are less people doing the reporting at the moment. But I checked the reports from UN. I checked them regularly, and there have been more than 1,200 Palestinians, including 603 children, have been displaced by settler violence since the 7th of October. It was happening before then as well, but it's just really got much, much worse.
Maura, you say that, you know, and you have evidence, photographs, video, whatever it might be, and that, you know, you will be showing those at tomorrow evening's talk. Sometimes when you are talking to people about what you've seen, and they may be more sympathetic to Israel's position than to the position of Palestinians, and they might be, and I think everyone can agree, rightly repulsed and outraged and horrified by what Hamas did on the 7th of October, and you tell them what you see, they might feel it's propaganda or whatever it might be, and I'm sure there'll be people like that listening this morning who feel that it's very pro-Palestinian. Do you have to show them the photos and show video before they can be convinced, or can people like that ever be convinced of what you say you have seen and heard?
Well, I mean, I simply talk about what I have personally witnessed while I was there, and I do show the evidence of that in photographs and videos. Now, I'm still in regular contact with many of the villagers since I returned, and I'm constantly get reports of the escalating violence since the 7th of October, since we left. But, you know, if anybody takes the time to study what's been happening in the West Bank for more than 57 years now, you have a complete imbalance of power. You have a massive, powerful Israeli military supporting, as I said, more than 700,000 of these Israeli settlers who've taken over Palestinian land in an area smaller than County Galway. And the amount of violence that that results in, and restrictions on every aspect of Palestinian lives, it's really plain for anybody to see. And if you even think about the scale of 700,000 people taking over land and a huge military in County Galway, you have to imagine the scale of that and the impact that that would have. You know, our government, for example, have regularly criticised and are very aware of what's been going on, and they've regularly criticised Israeli government policy. I'm talking about Israeli government policy because the occupation and the settlements and all of this is an Israeli government policy and enterprise of land takeover. So our government have regularly criticised Israeli government policy, in particular stating a strong opposition to the Israeli construction and expansion of these illegal settlements in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem, I should add, the confiscation of Palestinian lands, the demolition of their homes, their displacement by the military and also by the settlers. But Ireland has yet to take concrete action. They make a lot of statements. So it's
are we the only ones that can be accused of that? There's plenty of other governments that make statements about the settlements or Israel going too far in terms of the campaign in Gaza, but it appears to fall on deaf ears. And the UN itself even been fairly, I would say, ineffective in terms of affecting any real change in the situation in what's currently going on.
I agree with you, but I think it's really difficult. My point is that while the Irish government make these strong statements, and I welcome them, but at the same time, Ireland continues, in our name, our government continue to trade with businesses in these settlements. Now, I think Irish people are very well informed about generally about what's happening in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and of course now in Gaza. But the notion that our government will continue to trade with these settlements, which they constantly criticise, and I welcome the criticism, but criticism by itself will not have any impact on forcing the Israeli government to change their policies. And just like in apartheid South Africa, where Ireland, as a small country, spoke out strongly, it came from the ground up, as you probably remember the Dumb Stores workers and the actions that they took. But eventually the Irish government also took action on behalf of the Irish people, on behalf of us. At the moment, that is not happening. So at the moment, while all of this criticism is being made of Israeli government policy and the illegal settlements and all that goes along with it, all the violence that goes along with it, the government continue in our name to trade with businesses in these settlements. So there's a bill before that's been before the Dáil for since 2017 now, I think it is, called the Occupied Territories Bill, and that would simply ban the import to Ireland of goods produced by businesses in these illegal Israeli settlements. And that Occupy Charities Bill has gone through several stages in the Dáil and the Seanad. It has gone through the Foreign Affairs Committee and been scrutinised over several months. And it was blocked when the current government was being formed, blocked by Fine Gael. It was supported by both Fianna Fáil and the Greens when the current programme for government was being agreed. It was the last item which they couldn't find agreement on. So we continue. Our government, in our name, continue to trade with these illegal settlements. And also, the Irish Strategic Investment Fund, funds on behalf of our state, they have investments in companies operating in the illegal Israeli settlements. Now, recently, 2.95 million has been divested, but there's still further investments in those illegal settlements.
Do you feel more? Do you feel more pressure needs to be put on the government and on these companies?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are elections coming up now. There are going to be local elections, and by the way, my understanding is that local politicians, councillors, and TDs have been invited to talk tomorrow night at 7:30 in Tracy's Hotel. The elections are coming up, so people have an opportunity to speak to their politicians, because politicians are going to be coming around to all our doors looking for our votes. So there'll be local elections and European elections, and pretty soon it looks like we will have elections for the Dáil as well. So I would ask people, when the politicians come to the doorstep, to please ask them to please enact, for example, a simple measure of the Occupy Territories Bill to divest all investments by the Irish state in these illegal settlements. Ireland is also buying surveillance drones and military equipment from industries partly linked to the Israeli government, aeronautics defence industries and Elbit Systems. And they've spent quite a bit of money feeding the arms industry in Israel, and they advertise their arms at arms fairs as being battle tested on Palestinians.
And Moira, you are going to be, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who won't be aware of this, and you'll be opening many eyes at tomorrow evening's event.
Yeah.
How can people attend? Is there a registration process? Can people just show up?
No, people can just show up. It's tomorrow evening, Thursday the 18th of April. It's at 7:30. It's in Tracy's West County Hotel. I think most people know where that is, on the Limerick Road in Ennis. As I said, starting at 7:30. Everybody's welcome. Admission is free. And the local people also mentioned there's a rally in Ennis every Saturday at 11 o'clock, starting from the height in O'Connell Street in Ennis. That's something else people can do. But for the talk tomorrow evening, please, I would be delighted as many people as possible attend, have as many questions as you like. It will start at 7:30 tomorrow evening, the 18th of April, in Tracy's.